think it was Socrates who said, to be is to do. Sartre said, to do is to be. And Sinatra said, doobie, 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 do. You've heard that one before, I hope. And of course, there's Shakespeare who said, to be or not to be, that is the question. And if the Buddha were to have said anything that snappy, it would have been, to do or not to do, that is the question. Anatta, in a nutshell, is basically the teaching that the Buddha said, in all of our experience, no matter where we look, no matter how hard we search, we will never find anything that gives us a suitable, lasting identity. That whole search for soul, who am I really, what is my core true nature? Those questions that we ask, who am I really? What is that underlying thread that has given me a continuous existence and a sense of who I am throughout all of my life? What is my soul? What is my identity? The Buddha said that the search for something that is lasting, that gives us a core, unchanging, unique sense of self, is in fact not there. That so much of the human endeavor to find out and answer that question, who am I really, is actually a question that leads us towards causing ourselves suffering rather than bringing ourselves any sense of true insight or wisdom. Now that's an overview. To go a little bit more specific into what the actual teaching is, the Buddha said, if we look at what our experience of ourselves are, how we experience ourselves, he said, we'll notice five components to what we think we are. At any given moment, we have body sensations, we have consciousness of the senses, the smell, the taste, the hearing, the sight. So we have sense, a consciousness of senses, a consciousness of our senses that are, you know, comprise all those, you know, hearing, touch, taste, smell, seeing, etc. Then as we make contact with the world, there are things called perceptions. We perceive the world and we give our perceptions words or labels. So for example, we see a certain color or a certain shape and we say, oh, that's my friend, that's a car, that's a dog, that's a cat. We have perceptions. And with perceptions, our perceptions are not just objective. All of our perceptions have a sort of subjective hue to them. For example, I grew up here in New York. If I see somebody carrying a gun, I immediately panic almost. I get into this, my shoulders lock up, I get very, what the fuck's happening? I've actually seen undercover police officers remove their guns and I like go into this sort of PTSD type freeze, you know, like somebody who grew up in the South, who's seen guns all their life, is not going to have that same perception. They'll see the exact same thing that I do, a gun, but their idea of what a gun is totally different than mine. It's not a cause for any alarm. For example, another example is if I feel lonely, the sound of the phone is a sound that I want to hear. It's a good sound. it's a sound, ah, somebody likes me. I'm wanted. This is a great feeling. On the other hand, if I'm harried, I have a lot on my plate, people are asking a lot of me, I just want to be left alone. The sound of the phone is one of bombardment. Make it go away, make it stop. Why don't they ever leave me alone? Might be the thoughts that will go through our head. So the same sensation, the phone ringing, has two completely different responses, just like the gun or whatever. So there's perceptions of the world, but they're also tinged with what I might call feelings. That's the fourth component to our experience. Whether we like what we're experiencing, whether we have no opinion, or whether we don't like it. And these feelings are generally what we call gut feelings. They're not so much thoughts like, oh, I don't like the sound of that phone, or oh, that gun I'm seeing is scary. It's a feeling tone in the body that says, either when I see a gun, holy shit, or when I'm lonely and the phone rings, ah, the body says, yes, the gut feelings relax. Those are feelings. They're not thoughts. They are just an underlying feeling tone that responds to everything we're experiencing. And finally, of course, then there are our thoughts, all of the content of the mind that we think about the world. So to go through it again, we have body feelings, we have perceptions, we have the sensations of the body, perceptions, feelings, thoughts, and sense consciousness. So the Buddha looked at all these five things and he watched them and he saw that they're always changing. They're not, in fact, things that are static or that always have the return to the exact same default. As we grow in life, as we change in life, the way we perceive the world changes, the way we think changes, the way our body feels changes. Everything that makes up who we are is changing. So the components that make up ourself or what we experience as ourself is changing. There's constant change going on. And this sense of change gives birth to a certain sense of lack of solidity in life. We experience that everything is changing. We experience that who we are is changing. We experience this lack of a core, lasting identity, and we rebelling against it or looking for something stable that we can cling on to for this sense of who am I. We constantly return to that question, who am I really? Where is that core thing that is me? Where inside me is this core identity? Now, the Buddha said we don't find it because in his famous teaching, the Anattalakkhana, it's just not there. Everything's changing. So we can't ever find something that is suitable to give us a lasting sense of self. And that's all the Buddha said we weren't going to find. But, well, before I go to the but, I'll tell you why this is good news in a certain way. There is a tendency when we believe that we have a lasting core identity or soul to think there's something wrong with that. To think, oh, there's something inside me that's my true identity and I don't like it very much. You know, there's this sense that, ooh, if people really see the real me, they'd run away. They wouldn't like what they see in there. Or sometimes there's just a tendency to, when we make mistakes, just think, oh, there must be something wrong with me. There must be something wrong at the core of me because I keep making these mistakes. Sometimes some people will have certain thoughts that they experience a lot and they say, well, because I experience these thoughts a lot, those thoughts must be my true identity. I must be a really bad person because I think that thought a lot. I'm a bad person, so that must be who I am. There's a real tendency to take this idea that there's something at our core, a lasting identity, and then turn that misbelief into something that is bad about us. We believe that there's something wrong about us that has to be fixed. And then we get into the whole idea of self-improvement. Self-improvement courses. I'm going to self-improve by going back to school. I'm going to improve myself. I'm going to improve myself by finding out who I really am on a trip around the world. I'll add a lot of experiences, and somehow those experiences will resonate deep in my core and reveal who I really am. So, at the end of the day, the Buddha said, you're not going to find any lasting core identity. Furthermore, if there's any hippies amongst the crew, that's fine. I have nothing against hippies. But the Buddha was extremely naysaying when it came to the whole idea of a cosmic self. He said of all the, and there was a lot of people in the time who believed there was a cosmic self, that somehow in each and every one of us, there is a little bit of the cosmos that is in everything and everyone. Now, of course, the problem with that is, number one, if there's a cosmic self, I can't even say it correctly, if there's a cosmic self, then we really have, at the end of the day, no real ability to control our lives, or in any way, shape, or sense, control what our experience of ourself is, or take responsibility for our actions. Because after all, that self in us is not just in there, it's in everyone. It's not just in you, it's part of everyone. And also the Buddha said if there was a self that was lasting, it should be something that you had some control over. But the idea that you have control over everything in the cosmos is somewhat ludicrous. If you think you do, I challenge you right now to destroy everything in this room. I'm not worried, believe me. So, you don't have a cosmic self. But, even though the Buddha said we had no lasting self, here comes the good news. Besides the fact that this teaching frees us from believing there's something rotten at the core, or there's something that we haven't found, that if we only could find it, then we'd be able to get on with our lives in a meaningful way. It also, and in addition, it allows us to experience a criticism of our actions without taking it personally. Because after all, if what you are is constantly changing, there's nothing really to take that personally. The actions that you've undertaken, they're important. They're very important. But you don't have to take it like, oh my God, there's something so terrible about me, because that you is changing. Now, it's very important to go on and clarify that the Buddha never said there is no such a thing as a self right now. You all right now have an identity. You're all, each and every single one of you, an individual. The difference is that what makes up that individuality is changing. You're not the same person you were when you were 5 years old, nor are you going to be the same person you are now when you are 10 years from now. It's changing. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And so there is a self. It's just something that's impermanent. Now, with that in mind, one can say, well, what's the use of a self at all? Well, there's a couple of really good uses. The first is, in order to make your way in the world, you have to have a name, an identity, and a feeling for what it is you're experiencing right now. If you're feeling hungry, you got to know, I'm hungry, I need to get something to eat. If you didn't know that, you'd be in trouble. If you didn't have a name, when I say, hey, how's it going? And you'd look, well, I'm not that. I don't have a core identity. I don't know who you're talking to. That would be very irritating for me. I would find that very trying, in fact. That is not what the Buddha is teaching. The Buddha is saying, sure, you can have a name that you give to your body and to your experience. You can even use the sense of self, but you better remember a couple of things. It's not something you're going to cling to, because it's the sense of self, your identity, who you think you really are, is changing. Now, How does the Buddha work with self in a really skillful way? Here's where I'm going to talk about what you should take away from this teaching. The first is, the Buddha says that right now we have a self, right? We have body sensations, we have thoughts, we have gut feelings, we have senses, we have what we consider to be a self or an identity as of this moment. And we know that, sure, it will change, but right now we've got it. It's important, this self, because this self is doing things. It's thinking, it's focusing on certain things. And these things the self are doing are very important because they are creating the experiences that your future self is going to be experiencing. In other words, you are right now creating what you're going to be experiencing partially in the future. That is karma. What you do now is like planting seeds that ripen in the future. Your thoughts and your actions do matter because the future you is going to be experiencing the results. For example, if you think thoughts of anger or constant judgment of other people or of yourself, in the future, not only now, but in the future, you have to live in the mind of someone who has been spending their life or part of their life judging and being harsh. And that mind is going to be one of feeling ill at ease with other people, distant, critical. It's going to be a mind that's going to be claustrophobic. It's going to be a body that's going to be tight. It's not going to be the same you as right now, but it's not going to be a terribly comfortable you. So what you're experiencing and doing right now is important. You are, in fact, if you have to think of yourself in any way, think of yourself as producing not only what you're experiencing now, but experiencing what you will be like in the future. You are, in essence, writing the story of what your life will be like at some unknown time in the future. Every action you plant right now, every thought you have right now, is going to have a future part in creating the mind that you live in the future. This is not a spectacular thing to say. It's actually called in neuroscience neuroplasticity. They find, for example, that when they autopsy the brains of musicians, they've rewired their brains so that the somatic sensory part of the parietal lobe, the area that corresponds to the fingertips, is much larger. The brain rewires the fingertip areas of violinists and musicians so that it takes up a much, much larger area so they can be much more aware of what's going on with their fingertips. People who focus on certain parts of the body or certain thoughts completely rewire their brain. When people have strokes, they can completely over-practice, rewire their brain so a different temporal lobe controls their speech and their understanding. The brain rewires itself completely dependent upon how you think and what you do. That's, in fact, how you have any memories to begin with. Neuroplasticity. If it wasn't for the brain creating synapses that wired themselves to other synapses, you wouldn't be able to remember anything. So everything you're doing is creating the brain that you're going to be living in the future. That's basically what this means. What you focus on now, the thoughts that you cultivate now, they are the author of the mind that you will live in down the road. So do you want to live in a mind that is open and generous and compassionate, or a mind that is closed and critical and angry and judgmental and distant? It's up to you. It's a choice. So not only is the mind an author of what a very powerful tool creating what we're going to be living in the future, the mind is also doing something else. It's consuming what we've done in the past. In order for you to be here meditating or listening to me prattle on about all these dense topics, clearly you've done something terribly wrong in your past. No, I'm serious about that. Now, you've obviously done something meritorious to that you're even considering finding happiness in such a path, because most people try to find their happiness in accumulating wealth, accumulating careers, accumulating friends on Facebook. None of those techniques, in my experience, give birth to lasting happiness, much less lasting sense of identity. So you are consuming, in a sense, right now, what you've done in the past. If you want to know, by the way, the chief way that karma ripens in the future and the way karma is ripening, past karma is ripening right now, the Buddha said it's in actually our feelings. It's not in our thoughts. Our thoughts are not so much echoes from the past. It's the way our gut responds to what is happening in any given moment. Go back to the story about the gun. I see a gun and I immediately get a sort of tight stomach and a sense of there's something wrong going on here. That's a karmic residue from the way I've been raised, though everything I've experienced and thought about guns is playing out in the present, the way I respond to it. On the other hand, if I hear the phone and I'm lonely and it sounds good, that's a karmic response to the fact that for a while I felt lonely, uncomfortable, and I've thought lonely thoughts. Oh, nobody cares about me. Nobody wants to speak to me. Then the phone rings. I feel good. My body relaxes. So the way we are connected to our past is in the way our gut feels in any given moment. It's one of the great teachings of the Buddha. I think it's very profound that that is the thing that connects us to all the actions we've done in our past. There's other ways that karma can ripen, but principally it does through our gut feelings. That's the way our unconscious and our past speaks to us. So if you want to live in a comfortable body and a comfortable mind in the future, remember that there is a you, and that you is someone who is creating lots of actions, focusing on lots of thoughts, doing lots of things, and those things are going to have repercussions. Finally, the Buddha concludes this, or I'll conclude this teaching, because actually he goes on for many, many teachings, but since there is no lasting self, there's just an impermanent self, the idea of a self is something that we construct. It's actually an action. It's a choice. So you can use your sense of who you are strategically. You can actually have fun with it. You can decide, well, I am today a blah, blah, blah. I am a great meditator. Rather than spend all this time anxiously trying to find something that's not there, a lasting core identity that never changes, instead, have fun. Decide that I am the most compassionate person right now in the room, or whatever. Use it skillfully. Choose a self, choose an identity that will create or urge you to create actions that will have positive results. You're free. You're free to come up with what identity you want to have right now, because your identity is actually something that you're doing. It doesn't pre-exist you. As Sartre says, Anyway, the idea is that there's no essence that pre-exists you, that the way you manifest who you are is by what you do. You don't have an identity that's pre-given. So you can create it simply by focusing on what you do and what you want to become. Have fun with it. Don't believe that there's any given, imposed you. If somebody starts telling you who you are, don't listen to them. Because they don't know any more than you do. Because who you really are is changing. You've always been changing, and you always will be changing. But at least you have a little bit of a role in it. So take control of that and have fun with it. Thanks. That's tonight's talk. All right, so Now's the time we go to questions or any comments about any of your... Hi.
So I was listening, and I was like, that's great. I'm really into this, like, being free and not attaching to the ideas. And I was thinking about, but what about the presence of, like, patterns? You know, and I understand that, of course, you know, like, when you meditate, you have the potential to kind of, like, rewire. But, you know, like, if you say, you know, like, oh, I can't be in a relationship, and then you're like, okay, I'm not going to cling to that idea of myself and try to be in a relationship. And then, like, you know, five relationships down the line, you're like, I'm still dating my mother. Or,
right.
You know. So I was just wondering about this pattern. Like,
that's a great question. That's a great question. To restate it, and let me know if I'm restating it incorrectly, but... if there's no core identity, what about those repeating patterns that we, behaviors that we do, that we keep falling back into? Don't those things seem to be who we really are? The Buddha answers that question. He says, yes, there are patterns. They're called anusayas in his teachings. They're repeating habits, underlying tendencies that we fall into. These are behaviors that are repeating, but they're not defining who we are for a number of different reasons. A, because we actually, even though they repeat a lot, we can let them go. You couldn't let go of a true self if you really wanted to. If there was a core, lasting identity to you that was always there and always would be there, you couldn't just, if you had the right conditions and the right spiritual, you know, practice and the right amount of effort, just simply make yourself disappear or your true identity disappear. But the Buddha said, contrary to our experience with our anusayas, very often, in fact, we can free ourselves from them. People all the time do things that they think that they are incapable of doing, especially with their tendencies. I've seen people who've, for example, made their alcoholism or their fact that they always are in bad relationships or whatever seem like that's who I am. I'm an alcoholic, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. I am truly this thing. You close the door in the back, by the way. So there are tendencies, there are patterns, but they are things that actually are less stable and less written in stone than we think they are. And the Buddha goes on to teach that we can actually let go of these patterns or these repeating behaviors. How do we do that? By mindfulness. Before we act or react and fall into our old tendencies, we bring our awareness into the body, into the breath, relax ourselves, focus on bringing the body, the mind to a state of calmness before we act in situations. This is important because the Buddha teaches that the things that we do repeatedly in life, they come about when we're stressed out. They're stress responses. Anusayas have an underlying tendency, like when we fall into, oh my God, I'm lonely, I've got to go out to a bar and get laid, or oh my God, I'm stressed out, I got to go out to a bar and get drunk, or oh my God, I'm so angry with my mother, I got it, whatever. In all those cases where we fall into these repeating behaviors, there's an underlying stress. So if we can actually go and relax the mind, relax the body, and then remember that we have choices, we actually do have that chance of saying, no, this time I'm not going to do what I've always done in the past. I can break the pattern. So the thing that's always the constant there, if there's any constant, is just stress, an underlying feeling of discomfort. And if we can work with that, we can free ourselves from those tendencies that come to define for us who we think we really are. I've had a lot of things in my life where I thought I was completely trapped with, because that's part of selfing, is trapping yourself. You're saying, oh, I'm always the person who winds up alone. I'm always the person who's got the bad career. I'm the person who's no good with money. I'm the person who's everybody else is a good
set of parents, but I've got the bad ones. Everybody, you know, we trap ourselves into these statements about ourselves. And virtually over the course of the last 15, 20 years, I've dropped every single one of those things. It doesn't happen quickly. It doesn't happen in the blink of an eye. It happens very slowly over a series of long practice. But over time, we can completely free ourselves from everything that defined us for ourselves. So yes, those patterns are there. No, they're not given. No, we're not trapped with them. Yes, we can escape from them if we don't like them. But it takes a lot of practice. So I hope that in some way answered your question.
Yeah.